Hi, this is Lesbian Nation again. I've got a letter from a listener that should concern you all out there, and I'll read parts of it. I'm enrolled in a course called Special Topics in American History, Folk Historical Research. For this course, each student must design and carry out a research project. I'm hoping that you might be able to give me names and addresses of people who were actually involved with the Stonewall event. I remember your saying that you yourself just missed it, but I figured you might nonetheless know of some people who were there. To make the project work, I must find people who were participants in the disruption and who would be willing to tell me whatever they can recall about what happened and how it happened. Any information given to me would be subject to my informant's approval before I'd use it, and, if necessary, pseudonyms are perfectly acceptable. I also need to locate anything written that is connected with Stonewall, newspaper reports, newsletters or pamphlets, magazine articles, passages in books, etc. I know about the Village Voice coverage and Don Teal's account in the Gay Militants. If you know of any sources, or if you can tell me where to locate some of this material, I'd really appreciate your letting me know. Well, I, as you can gather from the letter, wasn't there on the spot. But if any of you were, or know of any other sources besides the ones in that letter, this woman would really like to hear from you. I can give you an address to write to her, Tina Crosby, Swarthmore College, Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, 19081. And I myself would be interested in the results of this research, and we'll make sure that this time we don't get written out of the history books. Another announcement, the Gay Women's Alternative, which I've also been plugging, a group for women over 30, now has a telephone number, 662-5109. You can call them up, and there'll be a recorded message telling you what the events are, where they meet, most of what you want to know about Gay Women's Alternative. That number again is 662-5109. Tonight I'm going to play a tape that I received. It's poetry by Marge Piercy and music by Jerry Ann Hilderley and the Painted Women's Ritual Theater. It was put together at an organization called Radio Free People. If you're interested in finding out more about this group, they produce tapes for radio. You can write for a catalog, which lists, among other things, tapes of women musicians and speeches and poetry. You write to Radio Free People, 133 Mercer Street, New York, New York, 10012. And you can buy their tapes on cassette or on 5 or 7 inch reels. So here's the first part of the tape that Marge and Jerry Ann sent me.
My name is Jerry Ann Hilderley.
My name is Marge Piercy.
Marge and I are old friends, and we wanted to make a tape together. We had done a lot of other things, like eat and dance, but we'd never created together. So after a long period of being separated from each other, we sort of simultaneously called each other up and said we wanted to see each other again. And we thought of, almost immediately, of creating something, which we are now going to do.
We both had gotten into the women's movement, and in many ways that had changed the things which we write or make. Women's art is both more personal characteristically, that it issues more directly out of the daily life that women lead, and more collective insofar as it is at this time in our mutual history, awkward word, functional to each other, to make rituals of unity, to deal with our pain, to make ourselves stronger.
I'm a member of a women's theater group, and these women are here too, and we're going to sing three songs together. We're in a a search to find a collective spirit with each other, and we hope that through music and theater images to discover this. The other women here are Virginia Moore, Eileen Brockbank, Margot Lasher, Carol Grossberg, and Lee Crespi.
This first poem is called Unlearning to Not Speak. I wrote it about a woman who was 23 and in graduate school, but it could be about any woman in college or high school or any woman. Unlearning to not speak. Blizzards of paper in slow motion drift through her. In nightmares, she suddenly remembers a class she signed up for but forgot to attend. Now it is too late. Now it is time for finals. Losers will be executed. Phrases of men who lectured her drift and rustle in piles. Why don't you speak up? Why are you shouting? You have the wrong line, wrong answer, wrong face. They tell her she is womb man, baby machine, mirror image, toy, earth mother and penis poor, a dish of synthetic strawberry ice cream, rapidly melting. She grunts to a halt. She must learn again to speak, starting with I, starting with we, starting as the infant does with her own true hunger and pleasure and rage. The next poem is one I wrote when I was working on a general turn-on article for Women's Liberation for a magazine, and I was looking at a lot of courses, a lot of books for domestication courses, you might call them, psychology courses, whatever, and it struck me how very fragile is the process in the society by which a woman is created or a man is created. Like, if you didn't follow the directions exactly, you wouldn't end up with the finished product. A work of artifice. The bonsai tree in the attractive pot could have grown 80 feet tall on the side of a mountain till split by lightning. But a gardener carefully pruned it. It is 9 inches high. Every day as he whittles back the branches, the gardener croons, it is your nature to be small and cozy, domestic and weak. How lucky, little tree, to have a pot to grow in. With living creatures one must begin very early to dwarf their growth, the bound feet, the crippled brain, the hair in curlers, the hands you love to touch.
There are people of our night, a sun awaits us. Beneath our night, a sun awaits us.
This is a poem that I wrote about 3 years ago when the women's movement was emerging and I was emerging with it, but I still feel quite close to it, particularly the end of it and the analysis of how people commodify their relations in this society. It's called A Shadow Play for Guilt. One, a man can lie to himself. A man can lie with his tongue and his brain and his gesture. A man can lie with his life. But the body is simple as a turtle and straight as a dog. The body cannot lie. You want to take your good body off like a glove. You want to stretch and shrink it as you change your abstractions. You stand in it with shame. You smell your fingers and lick your disgust and are satisfied. But the beaten dog of the body remembers. Blood has its ghosts, too. Two. You speak of the collective. You speak often of open communication, but you are secret. You form your decisions and visit them on others like an axe. In all of the movement, there is nothing to fear like a man whose rhetoric is good and whose ambition for himself is fierce. A man who says, we moving us and means I. And mine. Three. Many people have a thing they want to protect. Sometimes the property is wheat, oil fields, slum housing, plains on which brown men pick green tomatoes, stocks in safety deposit boxes, computer patents, maybe $30 in a shoebox under a mattress. Maybe it's a woman they own and her soft, invisible labor. Maybe it's prejudices or fermented hatred or images from childhood of how things should be. The revolutionary says we can let go. We both used to say that a great deal. If what we change does not change us, we are playing with blocks. Four. Always you were dancing before veiled eyes, before the altar of guilt. A frowning man with clenched fists, you leaned heavy as cast iron and sucked my breasts and grappled and fed, gritting your teeth for fear a good word would slip out. A man who came back again and again, yet made sure that his coming was attended by pain and marked by a careful coldness, as if gentleness were an inventory that could run low, as if loving were an account that would be overdrawn, as if tenderness saved drew interest. You are a capitalist of yourself. You hoard for fantasies and deceptions and the slow seep of energy out of the loins. You fondle your fears and coddle them while you urge others on. They are the only reason you ever need. I am not in your world, but with my sisters in your world is only you, and your fantasies and your fears and your abstractions range like favorite battered toys and hoarded, and the relationship you created from what was open and alive and curious, turning it to guilt's altar, private and tight as a bank vault or a tomb. That's still sort of my poem on possession, and I still like it for that.
No more.
This is a poem about the difficulties that women have in being friends with each other. Night letter. Scalded cat claws, arched back and blistered pride, my friend. You'd have cooked down my ropey carcass in a kettle for soup. I was honing my knife. What is friendship to the desperate? Is it bigger than a meal? Before any mirror or man we jostled, fought from angst to Zeno, sucked the onion of suspicion, poured lie on the telephone, always head on, one raw from divorce court spitting toads and nail clippings, the other fresh baked from a new final bed with strawberry cream-filled brain, one cooing while the other spat. To the hunted, what is loyalty? Is it deeper than an empty purse, wider than a borrowed bed? Of my two best friends at school, I continued to love the first Marie better because she died young, and I could carry her along with me always, a wizened embryo inside. But you and I, Claude, at Hardscrabble Hill, willing to fight anyone, especially each other, to survive. Couldn't we have made alliance? We were each so sure of the way out, the way in. Now they've burnt out your nerves, my lungs. We are better fed, but no better understood. Scabby and gruff with battle, bits of our love are doubtless filed in dossiers of the appropriate organizations. Bits of our love are moldering in the lost and found offices of bankrupt railroads. Bits stick like broken glass in the minds of our well-earned enemies. Regret is a damp wind off the used car lot where most of our peers came to rest. Now, years too late, my voice quavers. Can I help?
That was Marge Piercy and Gerianne Hilderly and the Painted Women's Ritual Theater. I'll be doing more of their work at some time in the future. I'm not exactly sure when. But that poem on friendship reminded me of something, and also Marge's remark that she and Gerianne hadn't seen each other for a while and then got together to do this tape kind of all of a sudden. Well, I hadn't seen a friend of mine for quite a while. In fact, we hadn't been speaking to each other for months. And I got together with her yesterday, which made me feel pretty good, so I thought I'd play a little music to kind of celebrate.
Thank you.
That was Lesbian Nation. I'm Martha Shelley. Good night.